Fast Money starts right now, live in the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Steve Grasso, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. Tonight, FANG bites the dust, the group losing more than $500 billion since hitting highs. But one top technician says one of these names is a screaming buy. Plus, one of Wall Street's biggest bulls is turning bearish. He will be here to explain what has him running scared. But we start off with the market rally, the Dow jumping 200 points as trade talks with Mexico continue ahead of Monday's deadline. The Dow is now up more than 900 points, on track for its best week of the year. But the true test comes tomorrow. It is the final countdown to the jobs report. We are less than 16 hours away from what could be the most important moment for the markets this year as investors wait to see if the report will signal the Fed's next move. So with Wall Street betting on a Fed rate cut or two this year, will the jobs report give the Fed the green light, Guy?
Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be back.
You were missed when you're not here. Joe Kernan does yeoman's work, but it's...
Which one is Joe?
He's Joe, guy with the hair, does the morning show.
He has hair. Yeah. That clears it up, because there's a lot of things people that think
Welcome
he doesn't.
Welcome back. But and that ahead, song me. Is a miserable song, number two.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. So we'll play it the whole entire show. Whenever you talk, it's going to go on. Anyway, green light.
Listen, the Fed doesn't need the jobs report to have a green light. I mean, they told you everything they need to know in terms of targeting inflation. BK has talked about it. I think they're on the wrong path. It doesn't matter what I think. But Pete said something yesterday that sticks with me. Pete, who just turned around. Wow. You know, the machines that take the market down over the last couple of weeks, the same machines that are taking it higher, they pick a couple words out and the market's off to the races. Today the word was, you know what, maybe the things with Mexico, push it off. Maybe we'll have some further conversations. That works in the opposite as well. And I think you could see that tomorrow. Tomorrow could be a day, and Seymour said this yesterday, where good news is bad news, and maybe bad news is actually bad news for the first time in a while.
Dan, what do you say?
Yeah, I don't think, a good number I don't think crushes the market by any means. And I don't think a number that is below, listen, you got to remember last month we had this huge uptick. We had this 263 well above the multi-year average. So I think if you're looking at this the proper way, you're going to smooth out some of these numbers. You're not going to take them month to month. I don't think it's that big of a deal tomorrow. I think it actually flies in the face of the narrative that the administration would like to see. They love seeing these good jobs numbers and saying jobs, jobs, jobs. And if all of a sudden they're starting to see that some of their tariff threats are slowing the economy here and therefore justifying a rate cut that they also want, obviously very confusing. Stay with me here, Pete. Then
you
we
lost
have
me at 263. Well,
but what I'm saying is that I think that it's a difficult narrative here. I think trade is the most important thing. I don't think one jobs number that flies in the face of what we saw last month is going to change what the Fed does.
See, I don't think trade. I do think trade matters because obviously it's affected the charts. I do think you'd be an idiot to say it doesn't matter. But I think at the end of the day, it's the Fed. The Fed stays soft, the market goes higher, that's it, end of story.
Isn't this all the same conversation, though? The Fed has turned more dovish, or the markets believe the Fed has turned more dovish because of these trade threats, because of the tariff threats, right?
I don't know if you could make it the same. Yeah, I hear you. It's an argument that you chase your tail on, but I do believe that the reason why we sold off in the fall was the reason based on the Fed. There might have been a 20% trade issue. So, yes, you can combine the two. He stays soft. The market goes higher.
But for right now, what's it all about? I mean, is it the Fed? Is it trade? Are they one and the same?
I think it's trade. And the idea that it's not just China anymore, it's everywhere. I mean, it's literally President Trump has made it very clear that it's not just a China story. It's a Mexican story. It's the rest of the world against the United States in terms of the tariff talk and all the rest of it. So I think trade is still number one. I think Powell and the Fed is obviously still sitting there somewhere not too far away, but they're the second part of this equation right now, I think. And I do think that at some point, are they going to do two or three? From what we're hearing in terms of cuts, what are we really looking at right now? And is it going to be something as soon as June? Because if so, Mel, that is an incredibly short period of time where we raised back in December, and then here it is in June,
is
and we're already going to cut?
The shortest amount of time, 155 days between two moves in opposite directions
but
since 1995.
If you say it's trade, then what was the last 2 days about? If trade is the number
algorithms.
One thing, so, well, what were they based on? They were based on the Fed,
right?
The Fed making its first pivot since the January pivot or December pivot. So it can't be about trade. Trade can't be the most important thing.
Well, I mean, listen, we were obviously pretty oversold. Sentiment was getting really bad. I think that last Thursday, a week ago, that's when we got these surprise threats about tariffs on one of our, you know, biggest trading partners and obviously not an adversary, but one of our allies right before we're supposed to re-ratify this NAFTA deal. So to me, that was out of left field. That would be very bad for them to put these tariffs tariffs in place on Monday, because then you start thinking about, okay, then you have to think about corporate earnings, right? You have to think about, all right, as we get into Q2 earnings season in July, what does second half guidance look like, right? And so what are these tariffs that people are trying to factor into their spending and all this sort of stuff? How is it weighing on the consumer? What does that mean for the global economy? Is there anybody who can win this protracted sort of stalemate if it's not a trade war? That's really, I think, what starts weighing on risk assets over the course of the summer if we do not have a substantive deal at some point by, I don't know, the fall.
But they keep buying time, too. I mean, isn't that something that we just continue to watch? Like, even the deal with Mexico right now, didn't we?
Isn't that a bad thing for the markets, though? I mean, you can't tell me that on second quarter conference calls, companies are going to give clear guidance for the rest of the year, because we still won't know whether or not the next round of tariffs.
But doesn't it give them cover?
It does give them cover.
And when you talk to traders, don't traders think, all right, well, the same way that Brexit was the hot topic for so long, and then no one cares about Brexit until you have something done. So they say, Brexit, I got it. I'll be concerned. Tell me when to be concerned.
Has it given FedEx cover? Has it given U.S. Steel cover? Has it given? There's no shortage.
You got to look at the macro. You got to look at the macro market. Yes, there are internals that aren't healthy, but those are internals. You have large cap tech that's been suffering. I agree with you. There's a lot of companies that cannot escape the trade target on their back.
For investors, though, who have to think about companies' future earnings, like the next two quarters after the second quarter, does it give companies cover to not give guidance?
Of course it does. Why would you give guidance in this environment? I mean, there's
if a company said the situation is fluid, we're not going to give guidance for the rest of the year, even though it's a company that normally gives guidance.
They're not going to say we're not going to give guidance for the rest of the year, but they have the air cover of Chinese tariff talks, Mexico tariff talks, you know, all the different things that are going on in the world, the situation in Europe. Companies can absolutely hide behind that, and I think a lot of them have. I'll say this, though. I understand the markets rallied this week, and everybody's extraordinarily excited. They should be. But are you really excited about an XLU utilities index making an all-time high in this environment? You really can't be. Gold continues to rally. Pete brought that up yesterday. We've been talking about it for weeks. And a name like Procter & Gamble. I mean, Procter & Gamble is about to make an all-time high, a company that trades 23 times next year's earnings. That valuation in this environment makes zero sense, but people are reaching. I don't think that's particularly healthy.
Let's say we get a good jobs number tomorrow. Do we think about the jobs number and the quality of the number that we get tomorrow and whether or not it is more likely that the Mexican tariffs will be put on Monday? And I put that forth because for a while, President Trump could bank on the Fed cutting rates. I mean, right now, that's what Fed funds futures are pricing in. Two cuts this year or so, maybe three
cuts
this year.
I think that chapter for the week is over. I think the chapter on where the Fed is over. I don't think a good number or a bad number
will change
matters
at all.
Either way, I'll take the opposite, that good is not bad. I think good and bad are both good tomorrow.
Despite the Fed euphoria, one of Wall Street's biggest bulls is turning bearish. Let's bring in Jonathan Golub, chief U.S. equity strategist at Credit Suisse. Jonathan, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Are you, in fact, turning bearish?
I don't know if I'm turning bearish, but I will tell you, I think that there's part of this conversation that's being missed. If you took the Fed out entirely and you took trade out entirely, we have really lousy economic data. And what you've had for really since September is the Fed is bullish and bearish and bullish and bearish. And then we're not going to, you know, have a problem with China. And we are. But if you put that aside, we've had 110 basis point drop in the 10-year bond yield since November. You've looked at the ISM, which has gone from 60 to, you know, a little over 51. You have industrial production rolling over. And that's the good stuff, because that's in the United States. It's weaker abroad. And so I think the key here is, you know, there's risk to the downside on the economics. And I think that that's getting kind of obscured by all of this conversation on short-term news flow.
So in terms of getting more cautious on the markets, is that causing you to rethink where the markets end the year?
Yeah, I don't think so, but I'll tell you what I wouldn't be doing. And listen, I've been on the show before where every time the volatility goes wild, one of you guys basically, and I say, you want to buy into this volatility, it's going to resolve itself. This is the one time in a long time I'm saying I wouldn't be buying in right now until you get this data to stop deteriorating. So if you see more downward pressure on interest rates, on inflation, I'd be holding off for a better opportunity. Do I think that this all resolves itself fine? Yes, but I'm not sure I'd be buying today.
Jonathan, but I don't think it's missed. And respectfully, what I would push back and say, the reason why the internals have been so bad, the numbers have been so bad, is because of this China tariff situation that's been going on since last March. A lot of people say the reason why things are slowing down is because of what's happening between these two superpowers.
I think there's some of that. But, you know, first of all, what's the big issue? we had a huge boost to the economy coming from the tax cuts, coming from a spending bill, and that's rolling off. And that was probably, the, you know, two-thirds of the weakening of the economy is the fact that we're losing that. Why is it that Europe has been weaker, or you know, the rest of the world's been weaker? Because they didn't have that boost that they were losing. So, yes, is this trade weighing? Absolutely. Right now, how do companies make a long-term capital commitment on retooling a plant or deciding whether to put something in one country or another? I think that they have no choice but to sit on their hands. But I think if you get beyond this, what the reality is that it has to be about the economics. And right now, whether it's trade or something else, the economic data, and just look at interest rates, inflation expectations, are just sloppy. Do I think this works out fine? Yes, but I wouldn't be going and jumping in today if I have a little, you know, if we have a
so
tiny pullback.
As a trader, whenever you say the market's got it wrong, I'm thinking about it right, you're usually wrong. So when what is, I'm not saying you're wrong,
okay,
but when you look at the overall market the last couple of days, does it make you feel as if the market doesn't care about the internals right now? It's macro.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen, in the near term, the news flow is going to dominate everything. And what's really very hard to do is to say, if we simply put aside the Fed and trade, what would this thing look like? But, you know, I think that's what you have to do, because if anybody thinks that they can predict what Donald Trump is going to do with Mexico, you know, I'd like to meet that guy, because I just, my confidence on that, or whether or not we're going to get one move, or you talked about three moves.
Possible.
How do you know? I'll tell you what the market know, what market's telling you, because you can buy and sell this in the futures market. Market's saying between now and the end of 2020, four Fed rate cuts is what the market's saying. If you got one or two, that means the market would be disappointed. That means the Fed is offsides right now in terms of interest rates. Yeah.
Jonathan, thank you. Good to see you. Jonathan Golub.
I guess the issue is this. So we know we have a Fed meeting coming up in a few weeks here, and the Fed fund futures are pricing about a 25% chance of a cut. If they cut, that would be a big surprise. I think that is not something that investors of risk assets would feel pretty favorably about, because we're not at a point, especially if this week's jobs or last month's jobs data is not a huge negative surprise, that sort of thing. So I think surprise rate cuts in the next couple months is very bad for equities. I think when you think about that double top that we have at 29.45, I think there's plenty of room to bang around between 2945 and 2600. And I think you're going to get opportunities to buy it at Jonathan's levels to get back up maybe a year from now if things bottom out towards this $3,000.
What'd you do today?
You know, the best thing I did today was a lot of trimming, because, you know, when you see the markets moving around like we have, we've had a lot of great trading days, quite frankly. And I think a lot of it, when I say algorithmic trading, when we're moving as fast as we are, like the other day going up 500 plus points and now total 900 points in just a few days, that creates some of the opportunities to now take off some of those positions. So that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm taking off more positions. The one thing that I actually added to today, actually rolled up and added to today, was the GLD. And I know that sounds extremely defensive. It's something the guy knows a lot about in terms of the metals markets. But a lot of people, we've seen paper in GLD. We've seen a lot of paper in the silver stocks as well. So is that an area where people are starting to flock to because they feel like there's a little bit of safety there, Mel? Maybe so. All I know is we're seeing huge sums of money going in the derivatives markets in those directions.
All right. Coming up, check out the After Hours Action Beyond Meat, Zoom video, and PagerDuty all out with their first earnings report since going public. I should say quarterly results. We've got the details next. Plus, the FANG fallout, the group of stocks all spiraling downward. And one top technician says they are dead money except for one stock. He'll give us the name. And later, oil bouncing back today, but it's still down more than 30% from its highs. Just how low can it go? The traders will weigh in. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a special earnings whip with shares of Beyond Meat and Zoom Video both on the move off their first quarterly results since going public. Jane Wells is back at headquarters digging into Beyond Meat, while Deirdre Bose is in San Francisco with the latest on Zoom. Jane, kick things off.
Melissa, I was just getting off the call. Stuff that isn't in the earnings report that the company went over. They are seeing 40% to 50% repeat rates of the Beyond Burger in certain markets. They don't have a whole lot of information on customer repeats, but they are seeing some of that, and that's what they told us. The company says Q2 and Q3 will be the strongest quarters of the year. They will account for 55% of net sales, so I expect to see some changes in the way the analysts have had the year laid out so far. The company says it has tripled manufacturing capacity since last summer, and when asked about how it is having full-year guidance that goes beyond $210 million, here's what CEO Ethan Brown said.
we're being very conservative. I view this as a floor. I believe that it's important to note that we really don't count in our forecasts onboarding of customers until we are in post-trial distribution.
See, that's important. They don't start counting that in their guidance until these trials and tests at places like Tim Hortons, which is going on right now, have been completed. And Ethan Brown said they have several tests coming up that he cannot comment about. And then when those tests are completed, they will fold it into guidance. Also, fresh out driving frozen. It's all about the fresh, especially Beyond Burger. They actually quit having their frozen chicken strips in the first quarter, and that's one reason why frozen sales fell. Expect more changes, more products. They're iterating as they go. He talked about something that he called the Manhattan Beach Project, which is a SoCal version of the Manhattan Project, where you have scientists in there constantly tinkering, and they're trying to get new protein sources, and they're trying to drive down the price of this stuff so that it's cheaper than meat. And then finally, he talked about growing international demand, Europe, South Africa, South Korea, parts of South America. But really, guys, the story of this particular earnings report was this huge jump and the gross profit margin, and they really do believe they can get to EBITDA break even by the end of the year.
Wow. All right, Jane, thank you. Great to see you in person.
Thank you.
Jane Wells.
Great having Jane on board.
I know, I wish you were here, but
she should be physically here.
It would be amazing.
Would be amazing.
Sorry today.
So what do you think of Beyond Meat? So you weren't here last night. Joe asked me the same question, and I said, and I would say it again. Last night, I said, what do you do? I said, you know what? The stock IPO'd at 25, opened at 46. I said, even if you bought it at $50 the day that it went public, you're up double. Take half off. You're in the stock for free. And I stand by that. What do you do now? I think you layer out of this thing. I mean, you're talking about scientists making your food now. Think about what she just said.
I know.
Manhattan
it's
Beach
disturbing.
Project.
Have you
it's
read
disturbing
the ingredient
on a number of different
Have you
levels.
Read the ingredient list on this thing?
Yes. And you know the
key
situation I had
isolate,
when I had the Beyond
Meat
Burger.
Which is not a pretty situation.
Problem is
which is
you're getting a deeper dive to the hell, which is what you're talking about. Once you do a deeper dive into what they're actually made of, it's going to be worse for you than actual meat. But that's not the state we're in right now. I do believe that they have a credible amount of competition going forward, but it doesn't seem to matter to them. 50% of their net sales is in supermarkets. A lot of the competition doesn't sell in the supermarkets. So I think right now, guys' advice to sell, take your chips off the table, play with the house's money.
What about the possibility, though, like with QSR, when you're talking about somebody like Burger King with Impossible, right? So they've already kind of worked out something there. They got the Whopper, the special Whopper. What about a deal with McDonald's or somebody like that down the line? I mean, there are possibilities that do exist for this company.
You and do a Burger King deal, you're going to do a McDonald's deal? Do you think McDonald's will like
Does McDonald's
that same,
do a deal
yeah,
with
yeah.
somebody?
With somebody, but not the same
Maybe
vendor.
Beyond or somebody. Yeah. Like. I mean, it could be very, I mean, there. I think there are possibilities that exist out there. That all being said, to your point, you've already taken, you got to take some of that profit off the table. And that move in the options market, Mike Coe talked about the other day, I think Mike actually totally nailed it. I think he said 12 to 15% move.
There
Stock's up $17, about a 15% move.
All right, let's move on to Zoom earnings. That stock is also soaring in the after-hour session. Deidre Bose is in San Francisco with the details. Deidre.
Hey, Melissa. Well, Zoom and another newly public company, PagerDuty, both of them are continuing their climbs, and that's really widening the gap further between their successful IPOs and Uber and Lyft, which continue to struggle since their debuts. Zoom is up more than nearly 10%, I should say, in the after hours. Aside from continued profitability, the company is attracting bigger customers that are spending more money. So the group of customers spending more than $100,000 in trailing 12-month revenue, its biggest spending customers, grew 120% year over year. Tom Roderick, analyst at Stifel, says the results were really strong. He noted that Zoom is also growing its wallet share inside of those big customers quickly. He wants to hear more about its enterprise sales strategy on the call and if Zoom's advertising strategy now shifts because it's a public company. Now, Zoom has quickly become one of the most highly valued tech stocks on a price-to-sales ratio. PagerDuty, another newly public unicorn, has also taken off as a public company. It's continuing that streak in the after hours. It is currently up more than 2% on the back of its results, so it has given up some of its earlier gains as the analyst call kicked off. Guys.
All right, Deep. Thank you. Deirdre Bosa in San Francisco. Dan.
You know, Deirdre kind of nailed it at the very end. You know, it's one of the very most expensive companies in all of tech on a price-to-sales basis. But here's the thing, and this is one thing that obviously Beyond tried to guide to EBITDA positive. This company, Zoom, is already EBITDA positive. This was a huge differentiator when they were going through their roadshow about a month or two ago. So here's a company that, yes, has a very, very expensive valuation on a price-to-sales, but if they can start actually booking real earnings, then it can kind of grow into that valuation. And I'll just say this, it's a very well-run company. I think talking to a lot of investors who were on this whole roadshow, you know, thing that was going on over the last few months with a lot of private companies. They were really most impressed with this company. So to me, I think that growth rate, though,
can they continue that? I mean, is that something that concerns you?
25% growth, sales growth a year for the next few years? Yeah, probably. I mean, this is like a, you know, just like all these other cloud-based enterprise-focused
things. Isn't it amazing, though, that this even existed, though? Shouldn't Google have done this? Shouldn't Apple? Apple has FaceTime. Shouldn't Apple have done something?
Yeah.
But how does this even exist? Having said that, I don't think there's a need. We just signed up as a company. So we spent a ton of dough on this, and it's something where you would think that no one wants to collaborate online. People want to text. People don't want to be seen. But people are out of the office. They work remote. Absolutely. As long as that is going on, you have people on all sides of the earth that want to chat. This thing makes a total sense.
I mean, we have a conference call twice a day for the show with all
you
guys.
We don't see each other.
On video.
Can you imagine if we Zoomed it?
Guy?
I don't know if we want to do that.
The guy's barely wearing, he's not wearing pants all day.
Right. I have pants on, so you say that if people don't think that, but I have nice slacks on.
It's true. He does have slacks. All right, we got to take a break. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC. First in business worldwide. Here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Yep, that's what bank stocks have looked like this month. And one top technician says the group is dead money, except for one stock. He'll give us the name and the trade. Plus...
Are you a pothead, Falker?
No. What?
Sure, Greg. Well, Illinois just became the 11th state to legalize weed, and it could send one hot pot stock blazing higher. The CEO will be here to explain. There's much more Fast Money right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Call it Fang's fall from grace. The tech giant, all or near bear market, down double digits from their 52-week highs as Washington regulators target big tech. Those declines amounting to nearly $500 billion in lost market cap as the scrutiny grows, with Google parent Alphabet taking the biggest hit of $173 billion just since April. So are these stocks dead money, Pete?
I don't think they're dead money, but anytime it's regulatory issues, that is something that really does alarm me. And it's something concerning because if the government decides to get involved, that really does change the equation. This isn't any longer just about how these companies operate. It's how the government thinks they should be operating. And that's concerning to me when they decide to jump in there. So I'm more concerned, and rightfully so, I think, based upon what we're seeing. Google makes the most sense to me. That they're getting the most attack. Mm-hmm. Facebook probably next. I own Facebook, so I'm not very happy about that. Netflix, on the other hand, I don't see that being as big of an issue because I think there's enough competition out there that that's less of an issue. So I'm still long Netflix. I don't plan on getting rid of it anytime soon. Facebook's another one where I'm keeping a very close eye on it, but I don't think it's time to jump just because it's gotten pushed down.
You guys are fan guys. I'm more of a MAGA guy. You know that. So I think, you know, what's really interesting in this whole conversation is that Microsoft is really not going to have those same headwinds as far as regulation. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the relative strength by Microsoft is just crazy. I just want to say one thing about Netflix is that really interesting to me, that stock has been range bound in a very tight range. It showed this amazing relative strength. Obviously, it's kind of come back down from the year ago levels, but it doesn't seem too worried about this Disney threat.
All right, our next guest says FANG is dead money, with the exception of one stock. Let's go off the charts with Todd Gordon, founder of TradingAnalysis.com. Todd, what are you looking at?
Hey, Melissa. Yeah, let's take a look at the original FANG here. And what I've done is taken a percent change chart from January of 2016. And this chart really kind of struck me. So Jan of 16 is somewhere in here. So this is like the zero line, right? So up to today, we have four stocks. Obviously, we have the haves and we have the have-nots. We've got, no surprise, Netflix. We've got Amazon. We've got Facebook and we've got Google. Google's only up like 30 or 40% since 2016. It's amazing where Netflix is up like 225%. So what we're gonna focus on, Dan was just mentioning a lot of relative strength in Netflix, but we'll get there. So let's get off of this and let's just take a look at the FANG, this NY FANG index over Netflix. And before we do that, I wanna make another point. A lot of people are talking about the underperformance of FANG in the last couple of months. It's been underperforming since 2018. If you were to put the NDX, the NASDAQ 100, on top of this, you will see that the NASDAQ made a new high where the FANG index has not made a new high. So you've had FANG underperforming vis-a-vis this index for a year and a half now. So I think that's pretty impressive. But Dan just hit the nail on the head there. This is Netflix in blue, showing a lot of relative strength to that FANG index. It is quiet, it is in a range, but obviously the market's in a lot of volatility right now. So if things were to stabilize, if this is not just a short covering rally, a break certainly above 380, very easy to say. That was going to be one of my talking points, that it's handled the Disney news of streaming extremely well. I'd expect the bottom to fall out of Netflix. So might be a little breakout trade through 380, and then you get that round number through 400, buy stops will go off. I think I'm going to take a shot there.
Todd, does a trading range in and of itself make you believe that it will break out, or could it be in a range for a very long time?
I mean, it can't be range bound forever, right? Especially a volatile stock like this. So yes, ranges will end, especially in the massive swings that we've seen in the broader indexes. So the fact that it's not breaking down, yeah, I do think we eventually will break. We have to, unless they delist it, which obviously that's not going to happen.
All right, Todd, thanks. Good to see you. Todd Gordon, tradinganalysis.com. All right, that's a fair point. Trading ranges have to end. The question is, do you believe it'll end to the upside or to the downside?
Netflix, it should end. It should conclude it to the upside. If you think about it, trade is not much of a headwind for them. They get caught up in this. And anytime they sell off on trade, you should be a buyer of Netflix. There's no real negative trade influence for Netflix. And when you look at the FANG stocks, there's nothing on Congress or on Capitol Hill that should affect Netflix. So I think they get thrown in. Every sell-off is a buying opportunity. Where Dan started the conversation about Disney, I think people are just going to have a bunch of these little packages where it's streaming. They have $10 a month here, $15 a month there. So I don't think Disney is saying that people aren't going to have Netflix. They'll have both.
I own Disney. I own Netflix. So I see the competition there, and I think at some point in time, Disney will start to really be something that's going to be a thorn in the side of Netflix. I just think that's down the line. That's why I think you can still own both, because Disney has enough other factors that are moving it to the upside. But Netflix, I got to tell you something, that competition is going to be real. And there's only so many dollars that can get spread out across the streaming world.
Pete, wasn't on our conference call today when you brought up Disney and the strength you saw there.
It's remarkable how well Pete wasn't on the conference call, because we do the conference call whilst
the halftime report is in progress.
Session. So it would be difficult for him to do both, although I'm sure he'd be able to do it given the opportunity.
I could probably do it from the
With
seat.
That said, though, it is the strength of Disney. It's been pretty remarkable given the move we saw from 118 to 136. It hangs in. Let me say this about Facebook, though. We mentioned it the other day. You had a huge volume day a few days ago when Facebook traded 3.5 times normal volume. 165 was a 50% correction of the December 24th low and the recent high. I say if you want a risk reward, for the first time in a while, I think Facebook shakes out pretty well on the long side.
Yeah, so back to, obviously, MAGA. We got to talk about Apple in this conversation, because I think what Steve was just saying about Netflix, they don't have to worry about trade and they don't have to worry about regulation. We know why Apple trades the way it does. It does trade on the trade issue. If that gets resolved, this stock is not going to have the regulatory issues, and that stock is back above $200 pretty quickly, in my opinion, because I think that they
Why
probably...
Why wouldn't they have the regulatory issues? They haven't they already said... Or
they're out in
reports.
Front of the privacy thing. I think Tim Cook has set the agenda, and he's actually, you know, really helped the regulatory framework of the way Washington is thinking about their competitors. I think they think that they have the hardware, they have the combination of the software, and they can dictate how their products are used.
All right, coming up, it is shaping up to be a cruel summer for crude as the commodity slides deeper into a bear market this week, and you won't believe how low one of the traders sees it going. Plus, Google making a splash in the gaming world with its new Stadia streaming service. We'll bring you all the details on that when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. It is looking like the beginning of a cruel, cruel summer for crude oil. Black gold is down almost 20% just in the last month as it crashes back towards lows of the year. And with crude in such a rotten rut, we thought it'd be the perfect time to play a little game of...
Higher or lower!
That's right. This is an easy game.
So
don't worry, Guy. Very simple. We go around the horn. The traders will tell us where they think crude is going. It's either higher or lower. Straightforward, right? Pete, we're going to start with you.
Do we expand on that or just give you a higher or lower?
We'll do a higher or lower around
we'll start off
and then we'll discuss it. How's that?
Higher. Giddy up.
Grasso, what do you say?
Lower.
What?
Also lower.
Of course.
Huh. Guy.
Crude oil we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Higher or lower?
denominated in U.S. dollars?
Higher, Mel. Higher.
There you go.
There you go. I know how to play
the game. So the outers say higher, the inners say lower.
Yeah.
Why lower?
Could you have scripted a better scenario for a bullish market in crude? You have Iran, you have Venezuela, you have dirty oil in Russia. You have an umpteenth amount of reasons why you should be a buyer of it, yet it's collapsed. That's telling you something right there. So, yes, you could have a little bit of a pop here, but it breaks below 50, it's 42 next.
What do you say to Grasso about that?
No, he makes a cogent argument. Obviously, crude should be significantly higher given what we've seen geopolitically and otherwise. However, you had the president jawbone it lower, and now you have a Fed that's about to torch the U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar goes lower, commodities go higher.
Hold on a second. Why?
I say higher.
But everyone's been saying that about the dollar as rates have come in and as the Fed has gotten dovish, yet the Dixie, the dollar index, is down 1.5% from like multi-year highs just the other day. So, I mean,
so you're on the dollar side of it.
Listen, I'm also on the other side of it. I think rates are going lower. I think the dollar is going to stay firm. I think these are like safe haven sort of situations. I think they're going to continue to have this weakening data that we just had Jonathan Golub talk us through in the A block. I just don't think that's bullish for crude right now.
Yes, young man.
I raised my hand.
Very polite of you.
No, because I don't interrupt. I like to be acknowledged. School, that's what we used to do. There was a great group back in the 70s, the Carpenters. You recall the Carpenters? Karen Carpenter?
Sure,
Carpenter.
And her brother.
Why do you bring that up, guy? I'm glad you asked, Mel, because one of their great songs was We've Only Just Begun.
And to
bring it back to Dan, in terms of the dollar going lower, Dan, we've only just begun. And I can... Thank you, Pete.
Thank you. Yeah, sure.
Why is that?
He thinks the dollar's going to go lower.
But to Steve's point, crude oil just dropped 10% in a straight line. Rates are down, 1.10, a full point in the last 4 months, five
but it's
months.
But sitting at support, and one of the other things Steve did mention, though, is he said if it drops below 50, you think it goes lower. That was the if part of that whole statement, right? So if it starts to move higher, does it go back up and test in those 60s? I would say yes, I'm with you, Guy, because if you listen to Mike Wilson, who sits here constantly, whenever I'm here, he's like a little pal of mine.
Hey, he's pal of mine.
He talks about the dollar all the time, and what does he say about the dollar, Guy?
It's going down.
It's going down. It's going lower.
And by the way, Mel, quickly, Paolo Mine was a horse in The Sopranos, if you recall. That was running, I believe, at Belmont back in one of the episodes. Paolo Mine.
I'm with you, but I don't know where you're going.
I'm just telling you.
I didn't know that. I don't think I needed to know that.
You know it now.
Still ahead, this red hot chip stock is soaring, and one trader just bet more than $1 million. The rally will heat up this month. We'll tell you what has been so bullish. Plus, Google taking the gaming world by storm with its big streaming bet Stadia. Does the tech giant have what it takes to get a one-up on the competition? We got the details when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Google looking to revolutionize the gaming industry with Stadia, its new video game streaming service. Josh Lipton's got all the details from San Francisco. Josh.
So, Mel, big news that could shake up the $166 billion video game industry. We just got more details about Google's new video game streaming service. It's called Stadia. It's going to launch in November in 14 countries, including the U.S., U.K., and Canada, with at least 31 games from 21 publishers. Starting today, you can pre-order what they're calling the Founders Edition package. So that includes some hardware, game controller, Chromecast streaming device, and three-month subscription. That's going to run you $130. Then starting next year, Google's going to offer the standalone service itself. That's going to be $10 per month. It's called Stadia Pro. For that, you can stream games in 4K video at 60 frames per second on your TV, your phone, tablet, or computer with a Chrome browser, as well as Pixel 3 and 3A smartphones. There will also be a free service coming too. Now, importantly, Google doesn't see this as really a subscription service. Gamers should expect to buy, not rent these games. But the big idea here is giving gamers the ability to stream complex, graphics-rich games right to their devices. No pricey PC or console needed. So is this going to prove an immediate hit? Well, Baird's Colin Sebastian, not so sure. He says the tech we see from Google is impressive, but the initial slate of content from the company, in his words, lacks punch. And remember, Google also has plenty of competition here. Amazon reportedly pursuing this same tech, and we know Microsoft is too, testing similar technology with its own employees right now. Software giant is preparing to launch the first public trials later this year. Melissa, back to you.
Josh, thank you. Josh Lipton. So if you were a tech giant going into a new business like a streaming gaming service and you're going up against tough competition, an important part of this would be good content.
Right.
What would you think they would do?
I would think they would buy somebody. I would think that they would buy either Electronic Arts or Take-Two or Activision. Electronic Arts is actually outperformed in the space. But I don't know, when Josh just reported that, what that service even is. So you have $10 a month. You don't get games, but you get the ability to stream games. That, to me, is confusing. I'm not sure that's a winning trademark already. I'm not happy with that. You should get a host of games or a library that comes with that $10 a month, or else it's not a real streaming event. It's just somehow taking $10 from me each month.
Right. I'm not sure if Google's in this for necessarily the stream of revenue at this point.
It's probably a broader strategy. When you think about one of the things that really accelerated Amazon's push into this space was when they bought Twitch. And so when you think about YouTube as embedded in Google, that's a huge thing. A lot of gamers go when they're watching how-to videos on YouTube. They're spending a lot of time. I think it just makes a stickier sort of ecosystem. And it's obviously content. And that's what Google kind of sells ads off of content. So to me, I think it fits into the thing. I doubt it's going to move the needle anytime soon.
Yeah, quick.
I think Take-Two quickly, a 22 times forward earnings stock has bounced. I think that's where to be. But the loser in this clearly continues to be GameStop, which was a $45 stock in 2016 and closed it basically with a five handle today, probably headed even lower than that.
All right, another stock on the rise in the gaming space, Advanced Micro, getting an upgrade from Morgan Stanley this morning, sending one bull stampeding into the options market, one big bet on this chip maker. Dan, why don't you walk over to the plasma and show us the action.
Yeah, sure. So it was an Advanced Micro Devices guy. What do we call that one?
AMD.
That's right. Yeah. And this stock has been an absolute monster, and it's been a massive outperformer relative to the semiconductor space this year. It's up 72% of the year. Option volume went crazy today. It was about two times average daily volume. Call volume is two times that of puts on a day like Mel just said. Morgan Stanley, a prior bear, is turning bullish. Here's the thing. With this stock's performance, it still doesn't have all of Wall Street analysts on board here. I think there's more holds and sells, or twice as much, than there are buys in this thing. But there was one trade that caught my eye. The stock obviously has some momentum. It was a bullish roll in June expiration. It's about two more weeks left. When the stock was about $31.50 before noon today, there was a seller of 8,000 of the June 30 calls to close, but they rolled that up to the June 32.5 calls, buying 12,000 of those for $1.04. Those break even at $33.54. That's up about 6.5% from the trading price, but this thing got going. It closed up 8% on the day. We have a chart here. It broke out of a really nice consolidation. This is what I was talking about this relative strength relative to the SMH, the ETF that tracks the semiconductor space, which is down 16% from its all-time highs in a little less than 2 months. Look at this breakout. It was on big volume here. This is the prior multi-year high just below 35. But let's go to the four-year chart here. This thing has obviously been amazingly volatile. Last year, it broke out above that level. It nearly doubled. We did have a 50% peak-to-trough decline in the Q4, but this thing has been moving higher here. So what are people excited about? The company a couple weeks ago announced that they have some new desktop chips coming out. They have some new server chips coming out in Q3, and then they just signed earlier this week a licensing agreement with Samsung for some mobile chips. So they got a lot of things going on right now, and we know that Intel has been tripping up on some of these things. So the momentum's here. When this company reports at the end of July, if it's back near multi-year highs, you may want to be playing further momentum with defined risk like this trader was doing today.
Pete? The biggest concern I have is that these guys are finally stepping up and saying, hey, you know what, I think AMD is going to finally move. As a matter of fact, just last week, that stock was trading at 27. Buyers, 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 buyers. I jumped in. Now I'm already out. I'm out today. Would I want to get back in? Maybe. But you know what? I think you're actually starting to reach because the stock has made this move up towards 32, and it was just trading 27 a week ago. So I think you'd want to hold back and see if this thing gives you any kind of a pullback first.
All right. For more options action, check out the full show tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. And in the meantime, get your fix at optionsaction.cnbc.com. Coming up, Illinois becoming the 11th state to pass a bill legalizing recreational marijuana. The CEO of one of the biggest pot companies will tell us who could be the next to give the green light to cannabis. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Pot stocks blazing this year. Check out some of the names, up more than 50%, and things could get even hotter for these pot powerhouses. Illinois becoming the 11th state to pass a bill legalizing recreational marijuana use, which would go into effect January 1st, 2020. Let's bring in Charles Bachtel. He's the co-founder and CEO of Cresco Labs, one of the largest multi-state operators in the country, headquartered in Illinois. Charlie, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what are you doing to gear up for Jan 1, 2020 in terms of your own company?
You know, without a doubt, expansion, CapEx, you know, the supply that's going to be needed to meet that demand. You're talking about a state that is going from a relatively conservative medical program. We have about 70,000 patients in it currently, to the fifth largest state in the country, 13 million people, over 100 million tourists a year, that anybody over the age of 21 are going to have access to the program. We think it's a 10 to 20x over the current size of the medical market.
Illinois is one of the biggest, or will be one of the biggest, marijuana markets in the country by state. And so I'm thinking of the example of California. Everybody looked to California thinking that's going to be one of the biggest markets in the country. And the tax revenues were really disappointing for the first full year of full legalization in 2018. A big part of that was this thriving black market. And a big part of the bull thesis for pot companies and pot investors is the notion that you can convert every dollar in the black market to a dollar in the white market and the legal market.
Sure.
How do you view that in Illinois and the rest of the country, for that matter, in terms of that thesis and where we are in cracking down on the illegal sales?
So, great question. And one of the biggest distinguishing factors between what we saw in California and what we're going to see in Illinois, California sort of put regulations in place for the first time. Right. Illinois already changed the way that medical cannabis was done. It really created Gen 2 of medical cannabis, which was highly regulated, compliance focused, and these limited licenses. So it's a very controlled program, a very professional, well-run program. So we're building on the back of that type of a program. And, you know, the legislature did a great job of marrying increased opportunity, increased access, points of sale, while at the same time, really giving the current operators, the current infrastructure, the opportunity to be first to market, because we have the infrastructure in place. We can flip the switch Jan 1, 2020, as opposed to having to go through an application process and have new people get onboarded and get up to speed, which they will, mm-hmm. but the current infrastructure is there to take care of that from day one. So from an illicit market standpoint, you know, I think we have a great chance of converting a lot of the incumbent illicit market because Illinois doesn't have its own inherent illicit market. That's all imported from out of state. So as soon as we get our infrastructure and our adult use program launched, we give residents in Illinois a great opportunity to participate.
Unlike in California, for instance, where they actually grow the product there, in Illinois it'll be easier to sort of to get rid of that illicit market. You're a multi-state operator, though. Where are you facing some challenges? Where do you see the most opportunity in various states?
Yeah, so our thesis really lies in we look at the regulatory structure first and foremost. We like regulation. We like there being obligations on the operators. We like controls in place. And then we look for big populations. So, you know, of our 11-state footprint, 7 of the 10 most populated states in the U.S., and then the other 4 have very, you know, high strategic value too. Nevada with Las Vegas, right. Massachusetts with adult use.
Is New York going to happen?
Yeah, you know, New York will, and that's one of the great things about Illinois pulling this off. First state to ever pass a robust, regulated adult use cannabis program through the legislature. And so I know that the conversations in Albany and likewise in New Jersey lately have been, can you do this?
Right.
Or does this need to be a ballot initiative? Illinois has shown them you could do this through the legislature.
Charlie, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Come back soon.
Thank
Charlie
you for having
Bachtel me. Of Cresco. Grassley, you've been trading this space.
So Cronos yesterday had a headline that B of A upgraded it on its potential in CBD. So if you look at it, it's up over 50%. Charles stock is up over 50% as well. You have to buy the top best in breed names. You have to buy the large cap names.
Appreciate
here.
You.
They're the ones that are going to gobble up all the smaller names. So just stick, instead of sticking with one name, buy a couple of these names. Make your own CBD ETF or pot or cannabis ETF.
All right. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, Pete.
They're coming after the yellow metal. Get long, GLD. Giddy up.
Steve.
Google needs content. Buy EA, Electronic Arts. Wow.
Dan, Nathan.
You know, I know Guy loves these big box retailers.
Sure.
You Guy?
I love
Which
them.
One?
Kidding me?
Most of the retail spaces just looks like death. I think you sell the XRT on any rally.
So Dan's coming after me for my final trade, but a mea culpa.
I knew you were going to
do that. Mine was a honeymoon. It was Pie O' Mine with Sopranos, the Twitter people.
Pie
Ralph Cramden killing me.
I know.
Ralph Cramden.
He's
Martin
a dust
Carney.
Driver.
Jane Meadows.
Well, you're trying to fill my head with fake.
Jane Costco. Meadows. Remember the other day Carter Worth said Costco?
Yes. Saying,
Carter Worth, smart man.
All right. That does it for us. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast. Meantime, do not go anywhere. Mad Money with Jim Cramer begins right now.